Now to what Science magazine has called the search for the real Da Vinci Code, the DNA of the great Renaissance painter and inventor Leonardo da Vinci. For more than a decade, a global scientific collective known as the Leonardo da Vinci DNA Project has been working to identify the DNA of the world's most famous painter, who died more than 500 years ago, which is a long time for genetic material to get contaminated. And Leonardo also didn't have any children, so there are no direct descendants to produce a match with. By day, Jesse Ossibel is director of the Program for the Human Environment at Rockefeller University, but he's also the chair of the Leonardo da Vinci DNA Project, and I'm very pleased to say he joins us on Sunday Extra today. Welcome, Jesse.
Thanks, Julian. Good to be with you.
Last month, a paper detailing the quest for what's described as the biological signatures of history was released, and it sets out a methodology that the project developed for collecting ancient DNA. How confident are you that the DNA you've collected is that of Leonardo da Vinci?
Julian, I think we probably have some of his DNA, and if we don't have it already, I think within the next few months or in the course of 2026, we will have it. We've done three things really in the project so far. One is we've developed a set of methods for getting this historical DNA off pages of old notebooks, other ways. So we have techniques, we have a kind of structure, a scaffold for the information we might find. And secondly, we've actually collected some DNA from possible living descendants of his half-brothers, from works that we believe he worked on, a drawing called The Holy Child, and from letters, for example, written by members of his family, his uncle or great-uncle or his grandfather. And we've even opened a tomb in the town of Vinci, not far from Florence in Tuscany in Italy, and found a bone that may be a bone that belonged to a member of his family, a descendant of one of his half-brothers. And so we've been developing the methods, we've been trying to collect possible sources, and then we've been doing analytic work. And I should mention also, in order to get the DNA of the descendants, we built up a genealogy from his grandfather through more than 25 generations, all the way up to the present. So we have this enormous chart that covers a wall that goes from about 1400 up until today with, ex begat such and such and all these begats up to the present. So we're hoping that from all these different sources, a bit like in a casino with slot machines, we're going to come up cherries and get a match.
Yes, that family tree does sound pretty complex, because even though Leonardo didn't have any kids, his father was quite prolific, apparently had 23 children.
Yes, his father was a very active man. He was a notary. Today one might call him a lawyer. Leonardo was the only offspring of the relationship he had with Leonardo's mother, who was a young woman, 16 years old, maybe a local peasant girl, maybe even a slave imported from north of the Black Sea from Circassia. One of the things we might learn through the project is more about Leonardo's ancestry in this regard. But yeah, his father had lots and lots of progeny. And because of all of these half-brothers in particular, and the so-called Y chromosome, one of the pieces of DNA that doesn't change very much from generation to generation, is passed on through the male line. So we've followed in particular the brothers, these half-brothers of Leonardo, up to the present.
So you've got a variety of possible sources there of different provenances. Is your method about working out which is simply the most reliable source, or is it about trying to work out similarities between those sources?
No single method is that reliable. There could be a bastard that could, so that the contemporary, the descendant, might not really be a descendant. Of course, other people touch all of these, the works, the pages of the notebook. So there's what you could call contamination. So there could be other DNA. Or in the case of, let's say, a bone or a tooth, it might not actually come from the person we think it comes from. Or even in another case, damage, let's say, from a flood. So you might have a tooth that is, so to say, a Leonardo tooth, but you might not be able to get DNA from it. So no single source is adequate. And in general, to do an identification, whether it's with a fingerprint or a voice or DNA, you need two sources. You always need to get a match.
So this paper that's been published talks about what can be achieved through these methods, but also the limitations of the methods that you've developed. Could you speak to both of those things, the feasibility on the one hand, but also the limitations you're finding?
Yeah, let me start with the limitations. One can think of DNA as a very long phone number. So let's say your own phone number may have, let's say, 10 or 11 digits, but the DNA phone number is hundreds or thousands of digits. And so we're getting fragments of DNA and we're putting them, so to say, in line. And eventually, we hope, especially as time passes over the next year or two, we'll have more and more. But we could get pieces from different parts of the phone number that don't contradict each other, but that don't overlap. So there's the challenge of assembling from all of these different fragments the pieces. So that's hard. And you could get a lot of fragments that somehow don't make a coherent whole. So that's one limitation. Then there's the question of the things we'd like to learn. Leonardo was an outlier, a fantastic outlier. He had incredible eyesight, for example, incredible visual acuity. He could see birds in flight. He could see the flapping of the wings of a dragonfly. He could see the motion of water. And you see this in his drawings. It's as if he had stop-action photography in his brain. Now, everything is a mix of nature and nurture. I like to say his family probably fed him a lot of carrots when he was a little boy, so he had this great eyesight. But anyways, there's a genetic component to vision. And so we hope we'll be able to find parts of the genome that are important for vision and could tell us in particular about his visual acuity.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Jesse Ossibel, who's the chair of the Leonardo da Vinci DNA Project. Now, Jesse, you mentioned with historical works that there's a risk that the DNA you get from them could be from somebody else, even if they're associated with Leonardo da Vinci. I imagine just getting to swab them is also quite a challenge. Have you encountered enthusiasm or reluctance when it comes to trying to get DNA swabs?
Julian, both. I love libraries and museums, but there are curators who are happiest when every book in the library is on the shelf, or they're happiest at the museum in the middle of the night when there are no visitors. There are other curators who are really eager for the books to be lent and for lots of people to be looking at everything and even handling it. We've certainly encountered both. And of course, the works of Leonardo are so precious, they can be worth hundreds of millions of dollars, that you know you don't want someone just to come in and carelessly do something and harm it. And we've tried to develop extremely sensitive techniques, basically using dry cotton swabs, also using baby vacuum cleaners, microaspirators, so that we can touch or come close to the works without causing any damage.
Do you sense that there might also be reluctance or fear that your work might result in some highly valued items being considered not from Leonardo da Vinci?
We've been contacted over the years by quite a few collectors who own works that they think are Leonardo. And of course, they all want us to test the works and prove that they are Leonardo's. And then the value goes from something small to something astronomical. But there could also be cases, as you say, where works that are attributed to him don't have his DNA. Now, absence doesn't mean he didn't create them. Presence is certainly very strong evidence that he did.
You mentioned various possible sources of DNA. I understand that some of the researchers on your team do have access to what they believe are a few strands of Da Vinci's hair. Why not use them? And could you tell us also about the grave site and to what extent that's useful?
The last 3 years of his life, Leonardo worked for the King of France in the beautiful town Amboise in the Loire Valley. There's a royal chateau there, and there's a beautiful chapel which contains now the tomb of Leonardo. He died in May. He was entombed in August, and then the tomb was elaborated in later centuries. It's quite possible that there are relics inside the tomb, but the tomb was also opened and maybe even looted during the French Revolution or on other occasions. So we don't know for sure, but members of our network, and let me say this is a wonderful project involving some 24 experts, historians, artists, microbiologists, geneticists, architects, there were hairs that were found, I'll say, in the 19th century, probably in this tomb, and in the hands of various private collectors. They are now in the hands of members of our group. The problem with testing hairs is that to get the DNA out of the hairs, you damage them, you do destroy them. And that we have maybe 10 or 12 hairs. We do hope eventually to do the testing on those hairs. We'd like to wait until we have a method where we only need to use one or two of the hairs, so future generations might be able to do tests as well.
This paper that's come out is still in preprint, so it's yet to be peer-reviewed, but it describes a baseline workflow, as it's put, for future conservation science studies. In terms of that workflow, how far through the process are you with the Leonardo DNA, and what's still to be done?
I used the word scaffold earlier, and we've now built the scaffold. As we test more and more samples, as we collect and extract DNA and test, analyze more samples, again, we can put it in. So you can think of it like almost like a jigsaw puzzle, where we now have the outer frame, the borders. And so it's become much easier now to put the new pieces that we get into the framework. So I feel we've passed really major milestones. We have more samples in the pipeline. We have the very sensitive methods, I would say, for collecting more samples. And I'll say the attention in these last few weeks to the project has also opened, I think, some additional doors to gaining more samples. So I'm optimistic that, again, I think there's a good chance we have it already. And I'm really quite optimistic that within, I'll say, within 2026, we'll have additional very encouraging results.
Right. Well, after a decade of work, that relatively short timeline must be encouraging and exciting. Jesse Ossibel, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you, Julia.
That was Jesse Ossibel, chair of the Leonardo da Vinci DNA Project and also the director of the Program for the Human Environment at Rockefeller University. And if you'd like to find out more about these recent developments, you can check out the article in Science magazine, which is titled The Real Da Vinci Code.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.